Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. The last three guys to do a podcast are back. It's our 48th edition. I'm John Morgo. Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown are joining me via phone because we're taping this from my kitchen and had a little bit of a late day today, so we're just going to be doing the old phone thing. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of good college football games yesterday. A lot of good NFL games today. We'll talk about all of that. But first, guys, the circus that is Antonio Brown made a couple of new developments today. First off, as we all know, he got released by the Patriots earlier in the week. And then he had, I guess what you could call a meltdown on Twitter. Pretty much saying that, well, first of all, he was basically accusing the league of hypocrisy. And he brought up Ben Roethlisberger's four-game suspension for his indiscretions. And kind of wondering why he is getting the cold shoulder by everybody else. And, guys, I think what he did, well, what Antonio Brown did, and there is a record of this, he basically threatened one of his accusers, and there was a text message that has been recovered, and it just seems like Antonio Brown is kind of digging his own grave right now, and for him to try to appeal to others, well, it's very I don't think he really understands the depth of what has befallen him.
This is.
And you want to go first, or?
I'm trying to soak it all in because it's really funny that we have to first start off the show about talking about one of the premier athletes in football and one of the best receivers in football, and that his name is coming up in this kind of light.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, John. Just a complete and total meltdown on Twitter today. And he's actually came out today and said that he's done with the NFL. He'll never play for the NFL again. I don't know if he was announcing his retirement or if he was doing or if this was just a boycott towards just the NFL alone, or is he going to go to Vince McMahon's XFL league? I don't damn know what he's going to do. But seeing this brother in a light like this, I'm not going to say it's bad for the league. It kind of is bad for the league.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at him, you can make the argument that what he's probably saying is true, because I think he's trying to play the cards, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, he brings up Ben Roethlisberger, he brings up the four-game suspension that he got or whatnot, but the thing is that AB hasn't been suspended. He just got released.
Right.
And you can honestly say that he did that to himself because somebody got hold of text messages that were sent to the first accuser, which was Brittany Taylor. Somebody got hold of other, I don't know who leaked it out. I think she did, but I'm not sure. But you can honestly say that if that hadn't leaked out the way it did, I think that it will be another situation. Steelers letting him go and him not wanting to play for the Steelers anymore. He and Ben had issues. They had issues over there.
Oh, yes.
With the Oakland situation, it was a helmet thing, and it was just a lot. And then New England, and then it's the sexual assault thing. And it's like, AB, come on, man. It's like, what are we doing here, right? You know, and I'm not trying to pin anything on him, but I'm not excusing him from anything, because a lot of this narrative could be controlled by him.
Well, again,
a lot of this could be.
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, I think with the helmet issue, I think, again, he's just he was just looking for a way out of Oakland so he could go with New England. New England was his preferred destination all along. He was just trying to figure out, how do I get out of this situation? How do I get Oakland to release me so I can go sign with New England? And I think that was that in a nutshell. I honestly don't know if he was blindsided by what Brittany Taylor did. He had to have known it was sitting back there, lurking in the background, and it had the potential to basically blow up. But with that whole situation, he just had to know that this was coming. And I think he was just trying to control it or whatever.
And luckily for him, the statute of limitation comes into play when we talk about this certain story, because the lawsuit was filed 2 years ago.
Right.
And the incident, I believe the incident happened 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And because it took so long, the statute of limitation comes in, so he's not going to be prosecuted for this.
Right.
So, okay, that's one thing you can kind of look over your shoulder. Then you have a second accuser that's coming out saying that he was also assaulted by it. It's like, why? It's just a never-ending saga for him. So if you look at New England's side, number one, we've always said it, New England never needed him. That was just a way to actually say, say, hey, look, nobody's going to stop New England's offense. Bam. But they really didn't need Antonio Brown.
Well, remember, New England kind of got burned. New England kind of got burned bad by, was it the Aaron Hernandez situation?
Sure.
I mean, because here's a guy who's a member of your team, and while he's a member of your team, he basically orders the hit on people. So, I mean, New England does not need this all over again. And I think that kind of gave them that, you know, once they saw what was going on, it's like, look, we got to get rid of this guy before it becomes chronic.
Kraft got jammed up too. Remember, Kraft got jammed up as well.
Exactly.
In the offseason.
Exactly, and that whole situation's been muddied. New England just says, okay, we have to save ourselves right now. We can't let this be a distraction. Now, if this whole thing happened in June or July, we might be a different story. But we're in the middle of the season. New England's going; they're 3-0. They are playing all three of their AFC East opponents in one stretch, three games straight. Beat Miami, beat the Jets. They got a big game with Buffalo next week. They don't need this distraction.
Right. And Buffalo just moved to 3-0 today.
Yep.
Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, I think it's quite unfortunate for Antonio Brown. I am among the people that, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a sexist person, but I do think that the timing of the lawsuit is a bit nefarious.
No, it is.
And
absolutely.
I do see where he was coming from as far as, you know, naming the Ben Roethlisberger situation. You know, but at the end of the day, Roethlisberger called two great cases in 3 years at 1.5. Ray Lewis was accused of murder by the Super Bowl. Dante Stallworth killed somebody to hit their own side. Josh Gordon failed numerous drug tests. Played for the same team, Patriots. Jerry Jones accused of rape. Robert Kraft accused of rape. All of them have one thing in common. They kept their careers, right? But one thing they do not have in common with Antonio Brown is while you're going through the due process, you do not in any way, shape, form, or fashion threaten your accuser.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
There's nothing you can... Now, you know, because the NFL is known for sweeping certain things under the rug, as was just mentioned. I mean, we can mention the Josh Brown situation. This is not just the NFL. Professional sports in general. Porzingis, as Daniel mentioned a couple months ago, has a red case looming over his head that they're not talking about.
Nobody's
professional. Right. Nobody's discussing it anymore. professional sports are big money, or things that generate large amounts of income for certain people, have a certain way of looking at, hey, production equals tolerance. So if he would have let that, if he was just, you know, just took him, just drank a nice glass of Be Quiet and shown up to work and did what he's supposed to do, this situation would have went away. Because I believe that the case is real weak. You know, and then you got the second accuser comes out. Okay, they're trying to Bill Cosby this man. You know, it's all some it's not, now it's into some Me Too-ish type of stuff. You know, which I believe is also very nefarious. You know, so he unfortunately, Antonio Brown shot himself in the foot with this one. I wish he, you know, when I had, I had to text Daniel earlier, but both of you guys had any kind of development. He's like, yeah, statute of limitations has come out a couple $1 million. It just didn't seem to go away. Then the same next day, Antonio Brown released from the Patriots. So they didn't accuse nothing they could do to help him. So unfortunately, you know, well, now would he retire from the NFL? I think his ego is a bit too big. I think this situation will blow over. And he just may be playing for the same team next year. Maybe, I don't know. But it's quite unfortunate on that man's part. If he does, you know, decide to step away from the NFL and pursue a different lane in life, best luck to that man. But very unfortunate situation.
Yeah, it is. And
That was well.
Now go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah. Hello.
No, I was just telling Leon that was well put. That was well said. I couldn't have said that better.
Right.
Than how you said that.
Right. Here's my question.
Yeah.
What was Drew Rosenhaus doing during this time frame? Because he's got to know that sending that text message is the last thing you want to do. So I would think that if Drew Rosenhaus, my agent, with this big client, and he's got all these problems, he's got to have, I don't know if fixer is the right word, but he knows he's got to need a babysitter. Somebody to just keep him out of trouble and keep him from sending stupid text messages. So either confiscate all your mobile phones, keep them off social media, and it's like Leon says, just have a healthy glass of Be Quiet. Did Drew Rosenhaus give him that message? And if he did Antonio ignore it? And I think that's a very interesting aspect of this case. What advice did Rosenhaus give him? Because you got to believe that this is I know Rosenhaus has got a bunch of other high-profile clients, but when you've got a man who just signed a really big contract with a lot of strings attached, you're going to want to make sure that he lives... that he holds up his end of the bargain. So, like I said,
we gotta look at it like this: a person like Antonio Brown. I mean, we've seen this man during halftime, during a pivotal playoff moment, record his coach in the locker room. Okay, I don't think I've ever seen anything done like that. So we're looking at in the mind of,
and get away with it, right. You know, like
and get it. And like, give me more of an extension.
Yeah, that's right.
So, in Antonio Brown's mind, I believe that he's like a, you know, I don't know the man personally, but he's giving all the symptoms of an egomaniac.
Yes.
And when you're dealing with egomaniacs or narcissistic people, in their minds, they do no wrong. And if they did do wrong, they'll just find a way to justify it. He's like, hey, I did the wrong thing for the right reason. And Antonio Brown's, in his mind, true enough, he did the wrong thing. He did the wrong thing for the right reason. So there's nothing you can really tell people like that. You can tell them, but, you know,
Well, he's going to say, look, I didn't mean it that way. You're blowing it out of proportion. I'm sorry you took offense. That's the big one. That, for a narcissistic person, it's apology, but not really apology. And like I said, the big one is, I'm sorry you took offense, which that's the big one. Apology, but not really an apology. No acknowledgement that you did, but you're right. No acknowledgement that you did anything wrong about this situation. That's what makes narcissistic people very, very tough to deal with in terms of, as you said, they will not admit they're wrong. They're incapable of admitting they're wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's not about to admit that. So you can't, you know, and now it's to the point where before he admits that he's wrong, I'm about to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really? Like, really, bro?
Right.
Like, the whole grand scheme of his argument, and basis is that I was right and you guys treated me wrong.
Yeah, pretty much.
And everybody who was against me, everybody who's against me is wrong. Like, this guy has put the Twitter on Shannon Sharp. He put the Twitter on Stephen A. Smith. In fact, I think he stopped following Stephen A. Smith on Instagram or something like that. But everything this guy's doing, he has a justification for it.
Right.
And he's not willing to say it. Not once has he heard him say, I'm sorry. Listen, it's like Leon said, so eloquently. Like, I understand his point, but when he came out and he started threatening the accuser, it was like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
What are you doing? And by the way, if he's going to quit football, he probably needs to go back to his high school English literature class or his English 101 class or something. Because when I read the text message online to Brittany Taylor,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I promise you, I had to look at the screen sideways just to figure out what he was. Now, luckily, I understand his tone a bit, but I went around and I showed coworkers like two messages or whatever, and they were trying to read it, and they was like, what did he say? it was just crazy, but I could make out what he's saying, you know. But I think sad case.
To quote Barbara Billingsley, I speak jive.
Yeah.
So it's not quite the same situation, of course, but you know, like I said, yes, but it's just a very, very interesting situation for Mr. Antonio Brown. He probably will not play in the NFL this year. I even saw a statement from the XFL that said they were not interested in drafting him. I think I saw that on their official Twitter account. I'll double check that during the week and report back. I think they're just going to let him get these situations sorted out. And as Leon said, he might be back in 2020. I mean, people are going to need wide receiving help. So he's got to take care of this legal situation and stay in shape and be sure that should he decide to make a comeback, that he is in peak physical form, because you know someone's going to take a chance with him. Somebody will.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody
yeah, he's
will.
He's too much of a talent. He is a big distraction. He is too much of a talent.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody to say, he's the first and second best receiver in football.
Right.
I mean, that can be said, but his distraction weighs just as much as his talent, and that's the problem. And that's why nobody wants to touch him.
Okay. All right, we'll leave it to it. I'm sorry, Leon, do you have something to say?
Yeah, I'll say he's not humble enough to retire.
Right.
Just being honest.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave Antonio Brown behind for a while and go move on to our next point, Georgia Bulldog football. I don't know if you happened to catch the game last night against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. The Bulldogs did a couple of interesting things. First of all, it being a night game, they actually put out some red LED lights so that the whole Sanford Stadium, which I guess now is Vince Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium, had this kind of like reddish glow to it, almost like I don't know, something out of Apocalypse Now. And then in a really good game, Georgia was able to hold on and defeat Notre Dame 24-17. Wasn't the route that a lot of people expected. Notre Dame did play a very good game, and there was a little bit of a controversy because they think that Brian Kelly instructed one of his players to fake an injury to slow down the contest, or you know, keep the clock from moving while they were trying to move. So my question to you guys is, did you happen to see the game, and what do you think of the Georgia Bulldogs? SEC apologists say this is proof that the SEC is a big time conference. What do you think about the Bulldogs?
That was a very interesting W for. So I'm more concerned about Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, because there were a lot of losses yesterday that were deemed as being upsets. So if you're the committee, how far does Notre Dame fall in the rankings? Because they only lost by 5 points.
Right.
For all things considered, somebody had to lose that game.
Yes,
and it happened to be Notre Dame. So,
the top 25 was released today, and Notre Dame fell to 10.
Right,
they were seven last week, and they fell to 10. But go ahead, though.
Interesting. So,
right.
What?
Yeah,
I think there is going to be a one loss on team.
There are a lot of upsets yesterday. Georgia is moving as I think they are. I believe that them and Florida are on a collision course, as we see Florida roll yesterday and Texas.
Florida played Tennessee. That's not an effective barometer of their abilities.
They rolled.
Yeah, they rolled, but again, they rolled over. It was Tennessee. All right, keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, Georgia's really. I believe that Georgia's really test will come against the Gators.
Right.
Later on this year.
Yeah, and Georgia does play Tennessee next week, up in Knoxville. So again, that'll be another easy W for the Bulldogs in that. I think Notre Dame, they have lost one game, but a team will make the college football playoff with one loss. There will be a team with one loss in it. I can pretty much tell you that. It's just because I think Clemson's going to go undefeated, and whoever comes out of the SEC, whether it's Alabama or Georgia, will be undefeated. And you're going to have a couple of one-loss teams in there. I don't think anyone from the Big Ten will go undefeated. I think Ohio State probably will get tripped up somewhere along the way, either when they play either Michigan State. I'm not sure who else is on their schedule. I do think they'll beat Michigan. I don't think Michigan hasn't shown anything this season. And the only question is, who will come out of the other two conferences, the Big 12 or the Pac-12? Pac-12 looks like they're down. And Texas had a pretty good win yesterday, so Texas's chances of getting in there definitely improved. I think now the Red River Shootout, which in a couple of weeks between Texas and Oklahoma, that's finally relevant again.
And though, you know, we haven't brought them up, and this is, you know, it's going to sound interesting, is Mr. Harbaugh's tenure in Michigan, will that become, are we looking at, is he in the wintertime of his tenure in Michigan? Based on the loss that they took to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think he is. I think the only way he saves his job in Michigan is if he beats Ohio State. They'll give him the end of the year. If he loses to Ohio State, he's done at the end of the year. Because the Michigan fans cannot take this losing streak to the Buckeyes.
Yeah, you know what, guys? I watched this game last night, the Georgia-Notre Dame game. And it was quite interesting. first off, I want to say something. I think that the those who vote on the poll, I think there's a little disrespect on both sides. Well, for one, Notre Dame should feel disrespected. There's a team that came in there, and they came in there ready to play some football. I mean, they controlled the first half. It was a tale of two halves. They controlled the first half. Of course, Georgia came out firing on all cylinders. Jake Fromm was spectacular. He went 20 of 26 for 187 yards and two scores. He was phenomenal. Ian Book showed us that he could lead this Notre Dame team into the college football playoff with just that one loss alone. I think really the only other game on their schedule that's going to be tough is the Virginia game. I think Virginia's got good enough to make a run. I picked Virginia to go to the ACC championship because I think they're the better team on that side of the conference. It came down to one last defensive stand by Georgia. And I'm going to be honest, guys, I think leaving Georgia at number three, I don't think that was fair to them. I thought they had the better win in the top five because they paid the better opponent in Notre Dame. Notre Dame was ranked seventh. Now, the only reason why they didn't jump to number one, they should have been number one after that victory. And I'm just being honest. Alabama played Southern Miss. We don't know what Southern Miss is going to be like. Clemson played Charlotte.
Right.
John and Leon can get on the field and beat Charlotte. Come on, man. We can get a Clemson team to beat Charlotte. Come on, let's be serious here. Georgia had a gutsy win, but they overlooked Notre Dame. They probably think that Notre Dame is a bit overrated. And I don't think that's especially with that quarterback in Ian Book on that.
I got a question though, Daniel. Uh-huh. It's about Mr. Fromm. If you're an NFL mm-hmm. scout and you're looking at mm-hmm. Jay Fromm, though he completed, well over 75% of the passes,
sure.
he couldn't get anything going downfield. And that was against, I would say Notre Dame, top ten team, very, a lot of great NFL prospects on that defense. I look at Jake Fromm. I just didn't see domination. Now the running back. I like what I've seen out of him. But as far as with Jake Fromm, I didn't see that command of the line of scrimmage from the offensive end.
Well, that was game planning. That was the game plan itself, because Notre Dame's corners are very good at defending on one-on-one coverage downfield. And perhaps they're probably some of the best in the nation.
They've got a real good freshman in Kyle Hamilton. He's out of Atlanta. Marist, he had a pick six against New Mexico the last week.
Right. And what they were doing was on second and third down, they're sending the blitz packages of 7 and 8. So they're coming up the middle. So Fromm has the middle wide open, and he has those short routes open. So that's why he was able to complete those short passes, and that's why he was able to keep the game under 10 yards and not have to do that and wait for his running game, which is probably the best aspect of Georgia's offense, to get going. DeAndre Swift had some great runs. He had a great game, actually. Heron had a great game coming in him. My problem was that I didn't see enough of. I think it was George Pickens I didn't see enough of, and I think he's a very explosive receiver. But regardless of that, they still got a double dose of Heron and Swift was just really wore down on Notre Dame's defensive front seven last night, and I think it was just simple mano-a-mano. Georgia outmanned Notre Dame by a couple of minutes. That was it. But Notre Dame stood toe-to-toe with them. And it was just Kirby's game plan. And you know, I was sitting at my brother-in-law's house watching the game because they're huge Georgia fans. Shout out to Melvin Godfrey and that crew over there. I was sitting there and I was watching, and my nephew was to my right, and he said, man, I'm waiting on them to open it up, man. I'm waiting on them to open it up. And I kept saying it's not there for him. because the phone starts opening it up. This is a game where you cannot let a big play and let the defense change around. Book through an interception, and it kind of killed the mood for Notre Dame that whole night. The third quarter interception, I think Reed caught the interception on the sideline. And I was telling him, I said, Georgia should be able to put this game away. It happened in the fourth quarter. And when you have things like that that happen, momentum changes. That's what that game was about. Whoever made the big play and whoever made the momentum change, because at the beginning of the game, you remember, Simmons must have fumbled, must have punted, mm-hmm. rather. He must have punted. He set Notre Dame up first and goal, and Notre Dame went in there and scored. Now, that right there would kill anybody. But Georgia, they're top three team in the country for a reason. And that punch to the gut hurt them, but it didn't hurt them as much to put them down. We've seen a lot of turnovers, and we've seen a lot of miscues and so on and so forth, that could change the fortune of a team in any sport. But that one didn't.
And Leon, I love how diplomatic you were. You were in that lead-in. You said NFL scouts when you probably meant Miami Dolphins. I pretty much love that because we all know that they will be getting the number one pick. They'll be looking for a quarterback, and it'll be a three-person race between Mr. Fromm, Mr. Tagovailoa, and Mr. Justin Herbert of Oregon. And we might have some other people coming in later. But yeah. We know that Miami, which played the Cowboys today, got 6 points. And, hey, Leon, Miami is playing your Chargers next week. And you guys definitely need a victory after what happened in that game with Houston. I know you don't want to talk about it, but Deshaun Watson, he showed a lot of guts. I watched that whole game today, and he brought Houston back. They were down 17-7 at the break, and what does he do? Three unanswered touchdowns, great duress under pressure, great at finding his downfield person. Deshaun Watson has really showed me that he is maturing as a quality NFL quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. And kudos to Deshaun Watson for showing up and proving why he's the defending AFC South champion as far as with the Houston Texans. Mm-hmm. Out of my team, where do I start with? I mean, the amount of leaks that we have leaks in the running game. You know, our wide receivers were looking, you know, there's leaks in our wide receiving core. But the largest leak that we have is in our QB being outscored 27-3 in the second half is disgusting.
I don't blame Philip Rivers for that. I thought he played very well with some good. He had some good passes. He almost led him to a comeback victory. He almost pulled that out. He had the 3rd and 12 from about the 20-25 yard line. He had some good passes. His receivers just couldn't pull it down.
Yeah, we had a lot of bad penalties come against us. You know, we had, you know, our offensive line was holding the ball. I mean, it was several times in which, you know, during key moments, plays were called back. I mean, it was disgusting. But one thing I've noticed about in our wide receiving core is that we just had a lot of drops. I mean, Phil Rivers, he can't throw it himself. A lot of these wide receivers, with the exception of Keenan Allen, are just dropping the ball. I mean, I think we had like three drops today. It's just, you know, it's like we kind of wrestled the feet out of the jaw of victory at certain points of the game. You know, but we have, you know, I think we have a high school JV team that is Miami coming up next week.
Right.
And all intents and purposes, we should win that game.
And I think it's in LA too. No, it's in Miami. Today. I think it's in Miami.
Yeah, it's in Miami. I believe we should win that game. Do I like this W? It's never good to lose a game. But I would rather take L's like this at the beginning of the year. Okay. Like now. It's the beginning of the year. We're still working the kinks out. I believe we definitely need to bring Melvin Gordon back. We dropped two in a row, very winnable games. It's about time we pay this man and bring him in. We need to be at full strength.
Yeah. And yeah, but the problem
and,
is,
you know, we're
the problem is, Leon, you guys are now two games behind the Chiefs, and they look very good in their victory today.
Let me say this: I'm an honest citizen.
I think you're going for the wild card at this point.
We're not going to beat the Chiefs.
Yeah.
No, we're
not going to beat the Chiefs. No, I'm going to be honest with you. Based on what I've seen today, based on how our defense just got torched by Deshaun Watson, there's nothing left of the torch that we've seen today. It was a dismantling. We got to play the Chiefs twice this year.
Yep.
At least twice. We're not winning against the Chiefs this year. I got to call my uncle about that, who lives in Kansas City. I got to deal with that. But based on the way I've seen the Chiefs completely just rip up a well-oiled machine that is Baltimore. That was a great game, too. Baltimore did not post. They didn't post. And yeah. Baltimore's going to be a real problem. But in order for the Chargers to be taken seriously, we're going to have to clip off at least 5 straight. Right now, you know, we lost some very we're not showing mental toughness.
No.
We're not showing, you know, we're playing down to our competition. But, you know, we'll see. Like this, the first quarter of the season, let's get these nails out the way now. But we're going to have to get some.
And another thing we noticed today, always curious about NFL starters, Daniel Jones of the Giants, his first game taken over for Eli Manning, and I would not be surprised if Eli has played his last NFL game because Daniel Jones brought the Giants back from behind. Tampa Bay had a big lead, but it was Daniel Jones leading the comeback. Giants defeat the Buccaneers, so I think a page has been turned in New York football annals, and it looks like that the Giants have definitely moved on, and maybe they have they found something in the rookie from Duke.
Yeah, they did. He looked phenomenal today, Johnny. I saw him on the red zone. He looked great, man. I'm telling you, he looked like he was a natural. I think a lot of people, including myself, really need to take a chill pill for a minute because, you know, I was one that said that, wow, you looked over Dwayne Haskins for Daniel Jones. So apparently they saw something in him that we obviously didn't see. This guy, this kid was spectacular. Now, Tampa Bay is going to have a good defense. And I will say this, Daniel Jones, yeah, you give him partial credit for winning that game, but you have to give a lot of credit to Tampa Bay losing that game.
Okay.
Same problem that they've had for the last 5 seasons, guys. It's the same thing that took them up today. They had a chance to win it. They had a 34-yard field goal set up, and they missed it. Jameis Winston even set the man up to kick in the middle of the field, and he still could not make that field goal. He missed it from 34 yards out. And once again, it's Tampa Bay's woes, and that's what's going to trip them up. It is their kicking game.
Right.
Roberto Aguayo was the guy a couple of years ago. They tried to find something. I don't know. I think it's just a hoax on Tampa Bay's kicking, on anybody who kicks for Tampa Bay. I really think it is. And that's what happened, but you do credit Daniel Jones because he did bring them back. He scored 2 touchdowns. He scored 4 total touchdowns, 2 in the air, 2 on the ground. He looked great, man. He looked like he had been in the league for a while. And this was even after Saquon Barkley got banged up twice.
Yeah, and he missed the whole second half.
He missed the whole second half with an ankle injury. Yeah, so, you know, kudos to Daniel Jones. And you know what? I thought that the move should have been made earlier. I thought Jones had beat out Eli Manning in the preseason. I really did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you want to give Eli that respect, just go ahead and just tell him at the beginning. You don't pull it from him after the second game.
Right.
You know, Eli Manning won you 2 Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, is he going to be a Hall of Famer? Shannon Sharpe said it best on Skip. So he said it best. He won 2 Super Bowls.
Yeah, he won 2 Super Bowls.
Yeah,
he's
going to get in the Hall of Fame.
That's the entirety of his argument, and it's a very good argument. You know, he's got 2 rings. He knocked off possibly the greatest team of all time. That would be the Patriots that was going for an undefeated season. Yeah, I think Eli does belong in the Hall of Fame. He may not get in first ballot, but he will be in within 5 or 6 years of his eligibility. Before we kind of wrap things up here, because again, we are kind of keeping things a little short here in the last few guys to do a podcast. Want to, of course, mention the Falcons. They lost to Indianapolis today in Indianapolis, 27-24. Julio Jones, again, you can't fault him. 2 touchdowns. Looks like Julio is primed for a big season. But right now, the question is, can Matt Ryan stop throwing the ball to other teams? He's got another pick in that game.
Yeah, he's throwing 6.
Yeah, go ahead, Daniel.
Sorry, John. He's thrown 6 interceptions already. He's thrown, I believe, 7 touchdowns, or 8 touchdown passes, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
He looked great in the second half. In fact, he had completed his first 16 passes in the second half alone. And it started to look great for him. But I think just getting behind is too much. Just didn't get enough. And again, listen, I wasn't surprised at this loss. I told my dad this morning. I said, don't be surprised if the Colts beat the Falcons today. And he was like, really? Why? I said, listen, the Falcons are a better team, but after last week's victory over Philly, I just felt like they were still on that pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had won something. You know, like they had really accomplished something. And they did. I mean, they got their first victory against a team that, you know, I think some still believe, even after they report today at home, still believe that they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender in Philadelphia. Yeah, you pick up a victory like that, you feel good for yourself. It was two NFC teams who were trying to get back to where they were a few years back and so forth and so on. But there were they only held the ball for 9 minutes to Indianapolis 20. The defense couldn't stop nothing. And this proves it again. It's something that's going on with that defense. I don't know what it is. You got all your players back, but now Keanu Neal possibly lost for the season again. And I feel so bad for him.
Right.
So bad for him.
Exactly. Yeah, that's another big
thing. He hurt his Achilles today, but anytime you hear the word Achilles and hurt Achilles and cut it off the field, that's not a good sign.
Right.
We saw this happen to him last year. He tore his ACL last year. And now, you know, my best wishes go out to him. But he had worked so hard to get back to where he was only to injure himself again. But Atlanta should have finished. The defense should have given Atlanta a chance.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They didn't do it. They didn't do it. Atlanta has the defense, and Dan Quinn has to make a blame for this one. Even though Matt Ryan didn't play like that well, he played okay, but this wasn't all on him. That defense has got to get stopped.
Right.
They have got to get stopped to keep the moment, and they could not simply stop Jacoby Brissett and Marlon Mack. They had a problem with that combination. They had a problem with the receivers. I mean, T.Y. Hilton is a big problem today. He had problems with the defensive end more than anything today. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this with confidence. If this team don't get it together, whatever it is they have to get together, they're going to have to fight well as a bad friend. And I didn't say that they're going to fight. They're going to have to. I like Dan Quinn. I think he's a great guy. He led us to that Super Bowl that year.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be created at the guard somewhere. And it has to be a baby team.
Well, they play Tennessee next week in Mercedes-Benz. Should be a winnable game for the Falcons simply because Marcus Mariota, he seems to have all the tools. He just can't seem to get any results. And it'll be interesting to see how that particular contest goes. Speaking of particular contests, next Saturday, the three guys who do a podcast will be having a live. We kind of experimented with this about a month ago, but I think this time we're going to go full bore. We're going to have a live Facebook YouTube session from Fifth Third Bank Stadium in Kennesaw prior to the Reinhardt University Kennesaw State ball game. This is the battle of I-575. Reinhardt with a 2-2 record. They lost yesterday in West Palm Beach to Kaiser by a score of 14-12. The Eagles offense is just going through a very tough, rough patch right now. Can't seem to get it going. They get yards in bunches, but once they get to the red zone, things kind of get slowed up, kind of get mired up in the muck. Kennesaw State, they are on a very good streak. They just defeated in a come-from-behind victory over Missouri State last week. They look very tough. It's going to be an interesting ball game, a very tough opponent for the Reinhardt Eagles, and we will be there. We'll have the call on ReinhardtEagles.com, but again, you can catch us on Facebook and YouTube Live. Facebook Live and YouTube, I hope to have it. We're going to be on for about an hour. We'll be answering your questions, talking college football, talking pro football as well. Hope all of you can at least tune in and shout us out. Hit us up with whatever you want to know about anything in the world of sports. And if that will be, I think we're going to try to get on the air at about 3:30, 3:45 p.m., go for about an hour, and then get to our presentation of Kennesaw State and Reinhardt football live from Fifth Third Bank Stadium. So that is going to be a lot of fun. Really looking forward. Hopefully we can get all the technical issues sorted out. I think we do have it, and we'll be broadcasting live for that. Should be a lot of fun. All right, so I think that's going to wrap up. Well, let's see. Daniel, Leon, do you have anything you want to get off your chest in our last few moments of this episode of The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast?
Well, yeah, I'll go first. And mine is on pretty much, it's going to piggyback off with John was saying earlier in reference to the New York Giants playing the take Eli Manning. And I see this happening not just with the Giants, but with a couple of things. First, I'm going to go with the Indianapolis Post with Jacoby Brissett and his impressive 2-1 start of his career. This not with also with Jacoby Brissett, but I believe that, you know, if Mr. Cam Newton does not get his act together, the same may happen to him in Carolina.
Yes.
And as well as we see going on in New Orleans with Terry Bridgewater leading his team to a big victory today, that was huge. You know, and this is coming at a time when Drew Brees is in the wintertime of his career. And as we see the start of a new era going on right now in San Francisco, where this is the first time that San Francisco has started 3-0 since 1998.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot of pages being turned right now. It's like we're ushering a new era going into the 2020 of the NFL. So the future is bright for the league. We had a minor black eye this year with Mr. Antonio Brown, but there's been a lot of positives coming forward. So, you know, my popcorn's in hand, and I'm ready.
All right. Daniel.
Nice. Yeah, so I want to give my hashtag to Alonzo Ball. Okay. Last week, I saw something on, I believe it was on Kevin Shannon's Undefeated show. I saw a clip on there from their show. They have a reality show on Facebook Watch called Ball in the Family. Okay, it's very entertaining or whatever. There was a particular scene where Lonzo and LeVar Ball were arguing, and they were arguing about the Big Baller brand and changing it. Now, of course, you guys know that they kind of went through a bit of a loss as they kind of absurd. So they just let him go. But as they're changing the name and they're announcing changing the name, LeVar didn't like that. He didn't like the fact that Lonzo changed the name. So they got into a little argument. Well, while we're doing the argument, he goes off to say that his son was damaged good.
Ah.
And I know that he probably said it in the heat of the moment, but the way Lonzo added it, he said, you know what? You got it. You good. He could have put that either way.
Mm-hmm.
That hit me a little bit. Because I had to ride home with my son. I think we were going somewhere. Oh, no. I was taking him to school Friday morning.
Okay.
And he made the decision. He's been having back problems since he's been going to boxing. And he made the decision to say, I want to sit out Friday because I'm wrong with my back. And he's been having back problems for the last 2 months now, right? And it just kind of made me just be like, what do I look like calling him Danny? There's my nephew, who I think I told you guys about.
Yes.
16 years old, plays baseball for my junior high school, who just had to have serious back surgery to correct his sciatica, which actually has put him on a cane for right now. I mean, he's doing so much better than you. I'm so proud of him. Jabari, I'm proud of you, man. But I sat and watched him in Emory Hospital. Watched him, me and my wife watched him, my wife's tears in her eyes, watching this young man struggle to get up out of his seat. What would his father look like calling him damaged goods?
Right.
Like, I thought that was one of the most absurd things that I could ever. And the one thing that I adored about, I think that we don't know LeVar Ball if it wasn't for Lonzo. Let's just get that straight, okay? That we don't know, you don't exist because of him. Your name doesn't come up because of him. You don't have a star power or whatever you have because of your son. So I thought that LeVar was out of bounds, but I give my salute to Lonzo and for him finally standing up to his father. Because at times you look at him and he's always playing that father's son role. But he stood up to his dad, and I salute him for that. But I think LeVar was out of bounds with that, and
yeah.
It kind of touched me a bit. It hit a nerve a bit for you to call your son damaged goods the way you did. Now, maybe you did that because he was out of the, it was for the sake of the argument, but still.
Yeah. That.
I would never call any of you damaged because of that. That's just not right. It's not fair.
No.
It wasn't right.
No, it isn't. And I want to thank you for bringing that. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Well, that's going to wrap us up on this somewhat abbreviated edition of The Last Few Guys to Do a Podcast. Again, you can catch us live on Facebook next Saturday. This coming Saturday, we'll have the exact time of air a little bit later, but I think we're shooting for around 3:30 to 4, somewhere in there. We'll be on for an hour. We'll be answering your questions. We'll be talking Kennesaw State and Reinhardt and anything else that you want to talk about. So I want to encourage you all to tune us in for that. I'm John Morgo for Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. We are The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, and we'll be back live in 6 days. So until then, have a good night, everybody.